It's time for Viewpoints on the Talk Station. Across the street, across the state, across the nation, and on the World Wide Web. Viewpoints is where you can express your point of view. And now, the host of Viewpoints, Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. Lockwood behind the mic this afternoon, and Ross behind the wall, window, and board. And, of course, each Friday afternoon at this time, we're joined by Jerry Hanifin of the Estate Planning Center, who is, of course, associated with or affiliated with USA Financial Headquarters. And you hear their program each Sunday at 11 a.m. We were talking with Jerry last week about some issues associated with Social Security, and, in fact, Jerry and I have been sort of conversing about the new awareness on Social Security. One of the areas, just one of the areas that he and his crew at the Estate Planning Center in Morehead City are working on. Now, I say that, and before I even get Jerry on, just to make mention, their attention and focus has been for the benefit of all of the audience on Social Security, but they also handle estate planning and assisting in folks as they plan their investments. But the attention has been, and with that, we'll get the comments from our guest, Jerry Hanifin. Jerry, the attention has been really and is growing on Social Security. Why is that?
Well, I think it's because, as we kind of touched on last time, the baby boomers, there always been, and there's a great fellow by the name of Ken Dykewald, who is a PBSer, written a couple articles, one's called Age Wave, but it talks about the baby boomer generation and this demographic when it hits certain stages of life, how in each stage of life, it's always been, there's an under expectation by the marketplace, and then all of a sudden there's a rush to fill their needs. So it's happened at every stage of life. So not unusual. It's actually happening now as they're looking for and receiving now Social Security benefits. They certainly want to maximize that, and they also want to, of course, get their health care benefits. So those are the first two things the baby boomers probably want when they, as soon as they hit retirement age. And so I think that's why the groundswell. It's a huge demographic. 78 million Americans are baby boomers, and they are they're in this retirement focus and just starting up for a couple years now, pushing on receiving Social Security benefits. And there's this big question mark because advisors have not prepared themselves to really mention this to clients and talk them through them. And there's really, from an advisory standpoint, unless you're doing planning, there's not much benefit because a lot of the strategies require that you dip from your current assets for a while and let the Social Security roll up to the future for a higher benefit, which means that they would have to pull assets out of the advisor's pocket or out of their accounts to do this. So it's kind of, you know, if you're more of a like a broker being paid on commission, it's not a great idea to see money flowing out the door, right? So that hasn't been a strong genesis for them to learn about it as well. But again, we're planning. So we plan first, then invest. So we're really more concerned about the plan first and how it's built. And if it's a good, solid plan, it's got good blueprints like building a house, it's going to be a solid build and it's going to work well. So this is a big piece because it makes up 37% of the average retiree's paycheck. So we really want to know about it. We have learned about it. And now we're letting the world know by giving seminars.
All right. We're going to talk about those two seminars. Just to go back to something you said last week, and I've made note of this, the numbers 37, 81, 77, and 365, 37%, as you just mentioned a moment ago, of individuals' retirement income is in the form of Social Security Social Security receipts. 37%, that's a third of an individual's average retirement fund. That's a lot of money. Then the 81, of course, represents the 81 ways that you can collect on Social Security. When I want to get to that in a moment. And then, of course, 77% of the folks that go to collect or go to their Social Security offices are the ones that are asking questions. Of whom Social Security personnel are not even allowed to make recommendations.
They can't advise. They can't create a plan for you.
All right. With that said, you just mentioned a moment ago, you've got two meals coming up in the week ahead. As a matter of fact, just around the corner, this coming Tuesday, the 24th, and then Wednesday, the 25th, you've got two functions. Where are those two functions this coming week?
Yeah, we're going to be in Moorhead on the 24th at the Soundside Seafood and Steakhouse, and that's at 5:30 right there on Arundel and 70. Mm-hmm. And the other one's going to be on Wednesday at Persimmon's Waterfront Restaurant, and that's 100 Pollock Street, and that's in New Bern, North Carolina. And you could just give Lori a call at area code 252-240-2461, and she'll be able to help you out with those, getting some tickets and a little pre-qualification questions, and you should love to see you there and buy you dinner, Lockwood.
How much does this cost?
Absolutely nothing if you're one that actually qualifies.
Wow. And one of those qualifications is, of course, you are not a long-term recipient of Social Security greater than 365 days. Is that right?
That's correct. Right. That's one of the
that's
issues. That's one of the, it's a key one. It's not necessarily always a deal breaker, because sometimes folks are just looking for people who, let's face it. A lot of people have portfolios, Lockwood, mm-hmm. but they don't have a plan.
Right.
And so a portfolio, by the way, is not a plan. So they'll sit there, and that's one of the first questions we ask is, do you have a plan? Do you have a financial or retirement plan? And, I mean, it's amazing where they'll show me the portfolio. I'm like, that's not a plan. Do you have a plan? And so it's very different. Right. And so there's some folks who are receiving Social Security but really don't want a product or portfolio. They want a plan.
You know, I think that's we didn't discuss this prior to you joining us this afternoon. Of course, Jerry Hanifin of the Estate Planning Center. Interestingly enough, that's in the name, isn't it? Estate
it sure is.
Planning Center. I think that's interesting. You parse a word here. You said portfolio versus a plan. In other words, I've got this nest egg, and it's just sitting there. But you're going to challenge me and others to say, okay, what do you want to do with that nest egg? What do you need? What do you expect to need in the future? Am I thinking correctly?
Yeah. What's your plan with that? Is there an income plan that you need? Is there a long-term care type plan that you might need? What's the plan with those monies? What is it? What does it look like? And again, I also quote another one just to kind of keep going on this planning word. Uh-huh. We have Dwight Eisenhower said, plans are nothing, planning is everything. So a lot of folks will have a plan, right, but mm-hmm. it sits up on the shelf. It's pretty, leather, gold embossed, but it actually, they don't work the plan. So it's really useless.
All right. Jerry Hanifin of the Estate Planning Center, our guest each Friday afternoon, and the purpose is to just sort of talk ahead and see what's happening. We're hearing about two events taking place just the week ahead on September 24th and September 25th at the Persimmons, and it sounds like a free, that's a striking word, free meal is involved in this, as well as the opportunity to learn something and prepare. You know, we're going to get to that in a moment. Probably have to go to another segment here. Probably not enough time, Jerry, but and also to remind you the number if you'd like to participate in this meal, or for that matter, even to call ahead and say, let's talk about some broader planning and opportunities. That number, 252 area code 240-2461. That's 240-2461. But you do have a website, is that right?
Sure do. It's estateplanningctr, that's short for center, mm-hmm. .com. So it's estate, E-S-T-A-T-E, planning center, ctr.com.
Jerry, with about a minute to go, I know that there's a lot of discussion right now on Social Security, and I'm wondering, is there a possibility that there could be some confusion out there? You've been in the business now for, since 2011.
22 years.
And here you are working on Social Security. You've got folks here that may be rushing to seek answers from folks who may not have the experience. Is there a possibility that they could be led down the wrong path?
All the time. And, you know, it's sad because I can tell you, and I tell some of these stories in the seminar, but I can tell you story after story of folks right here in the New Bern office and issues that they've run into. I mean, just this week we had somebody that came in and probably was suggested that they should have taken something when they really didn't need to. They were working, they didn't need the funds, and they would have been a lot better off if they had let it roll up. Because now when you're working with Social Security, that's another thing, is there's a disincentive by Uncle Sam when you're receiving Social Security benefits to work, because that income, you can lose some of your Social Security benefits. So that's another just scratch your head kind of a scenario, but it's real and it's happening. So there's different advice that really has to be considered, and the whole picture's got to be kind of taken a look at.
All right, the way to do so, participate in the upcoming meals, either this coming Tuesday or next or Wednesday at the Soundside Steakhouse, Seafood and Steakhouse in Morehead City, Persimmons Waterfront Restaurant in New Bern. That's September 24, 25. And if you'd like to participate, the number, a 252 area code 240-2461. That's 252 area code 240-2461. Jerry Hannafin of the Estate Planning Center, our guest this afternoon. And that website, one more time, Jerry, is?
It's estateplanningctr.com. And remember, plan first, invest second.
You're listening to Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. North Carolina's labor market recovery appears stalled. This from the South by North Strategies Limited. John Quinterno, we've had him on in the past. We'll talk about this and so much more related to, well, the events in North Carolina. We've been covering some news of late with the national issues. And we have joining us this afternoon, Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, nccivitas.org, of course, is their website. So much to talk about, Francis, but good afternoon, first out of the gate. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. Always good to be with you.
So much going on. We've got, growing dissatisfaction, apparently, in Raleigh and among folks, across the state, apparently, with both the governor and the president. It doesn't look like it's a good time to be in a leadership role, but what's going on? I mean, the governor and his challenges in having to defend Secretary Voss of the Department of Health and Human Services, you know, who's in charge in Raleigh, by the way? What's going on?
Well, it looks like from the opinion polls, you know, they believe the governor's in charge, and some people, you know, aren't that happy. But it's interesting. I got to say, there are actually the two polls, the Elon University and the High Point poll, both came out very recently. And a surprising thing, I would say that if you ask most of the reporters and everything, if Governor McCrory would be as popular as President Obama, they would have laughed. But according to these two polls, he's actually more popular.
I know.
His job approval is better than the president. So that kind of tells you a couple things. One, and they're kind of wrong direction, right track tells this. 60+% of the people think we're heading in the wrong direction. The very sour mood out there. And two, they're not real happy with politicians, kind of any stripe.
That seems to be the case. And, of course, we're going to get into this in a few minutes. Department of Health and Human Services, we're talking about that as well. But, Francis, the events of the past week, the governor seems to be getting hammered on all sides. Even some conservatives have expressed some frustration with him, related, of course, to his reaction to the veto override. We now have a variety of groups that are wondering what's taking place. We're seeing stories, as a matter of fact, we've covered here locally in the Carteret County News Times, for which I'm associated, the frustrations with NC Tracks and NC Fast, the fact that this new computer system, which, by the way, we have to remind everyone, has its its creation in previous administrations. And at that time, there was warnings of concern that making such a major change in the computer system, which, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, is something like 6 or 7 years behind schedule and way over budget. But they're just the thing that intrigues me is the governor's coming out defending his department heads, and yet the department heads themselves are not being overly responsive to either the media or the critics. That's why I'm wondering, why is the governor feeling he's got to do this when he's got hired hands to do the jobs and they need to sort of step up? What's your thought, Francis?
Well, your opening thing there gave us fodder for the entire show.
Yeah, so I know. I know.
Because let's take a couple things one at a time. One, you kind of talk about this NC Tracks system that's taken, you know, over half a decade. Think about that, half a decade to develop. Do you realize when they started developing that, the iPhone did not exist?
True.
Think about that. So that tells you something about state government and its ability to do technology and procurement and everything. Also, that could be more an indictment of North Carolina state government than anything. I don't think all state governments are that way. So that's, on that whole thing, that's a huge problem, and McCrory has inherited that. Now he owns it. And which gets back to the point of the next point I want to make, is that personnel is policy. And one of the things you're seeing is that the McCrory administration has been kind of very deliberate. That some people would applaud that. They have not been overly political in their appointments in terms of replacing staff. You hear about it in the paper because they are doing it in such a kind of methodical way that every new hire is able to be talked about
right
in the press. Well, if you don't have your own people in there and you're getting blamed for something, then you have a problem in defending it. And like you just said, you don't seem to hear much out of the departments. Well, a lot of those departments are still people who were in there previously, and so they're probably not real anxious to run to the front to defend anybody because they know that could be the last time they say anything in that job. So, you know, that is going back to President Reagan and his statement when he went in is personnel is policy. So that what you're seeing right now is death by a thousand cuts as he tries to get his personnel in there.
Okay, there's that. And then let's talk about these poll numbers. And by the way, we can chat about some of the poll numbers associated with such things. And one of them I want to mention, and of course, this is the Elon poll. And you have some frustration with the Elon poll. Share with us, before we even get into that, what is your doubts on the Elon poll?
Well, the Elon poll does all adults. They do not just poll voters.
They don't distinguish between voters and non-voters.
Right. Now, other than that, I mean, I think their numbers are, for what they're polling, probably are pretty good numbers. You know, I'm not questioning their professionalism or anything, but, you know, it is.
Why not? I think it's fun always to question
somebody's profession. As long as they're telling you they're all voters, that's fine. I mean, all adults.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's, for a lot of people, it's misleading when on one hand they're getting voter polls and the other they're getting all voters. And now they do go into the, if you bother reading the actual thing, not just the headline numbers, they do a breakout compared to, I believe, the registered voters or people who they confirm are registered and the ones who are not registered and all that. But the number gets even smaller when you look at voters. But other than that, I think the two polls, and I looked at, compared the Elon and the High Point University, pretty similar numbers. I mean, you know, and basically the trends were the same in it. And if you look at all of them, you didn't have one saying this person's popular, more higher approval than disapproval, and on the other one, higher disapproval than approval. They all pretty much agreed. So what we're talking about is a matter of degree, not direction.
All right. And then I want to get to another item very quickly before we go to the break. And that, of course, has to do with the fact that Department of Health and Human Services is now faced with some decision-making on the issue of health exchanges. Oh, did I mention we're about to have national health care kicking in about, 14 days or so.
No. You got ahead of yourself, Lockwood.
Well, the exchanges, that is.
The exchanges kick in. The health care, the actual insurance doesn't start becoming effective till 2014.
14, but still.
Unless some things happen, but we'll find out.
Well, accepting the fact that it is still the law as late as here September 16, September 20, what exactly is the work that's got to be done in North Carolina? I saw that the state has, in fact, allowed Department of Health and Human Services, certain offices to go ahead and provide information on the exchanges. But has anybody been hired? Is there any work that's taken place in preparation for the October 1 deadline?
Well, what's happening is really nothing is not being done. What they want is they want the state to publicize the exchanges and to encourage people to use them. And I think that's a policy decision for each state to make, whether
mm-hmm.
or not
right.
the individual state wants to encourage use of the exchanges. Remember, this is a federal program. This is not a state program.
Well, it exactly. And, of course, each state is handling it differently. So the question is, will this prove fodder? We haven't even talked about Moral Mondays, which continue, but will this prove fodder for the editorial pages and also the progressives in the state who are seeing this as, everything from trying to steal food from the hungry to not caring about the conditions of the ill and infirm. What's going to be coming out of this? It's been a PR nightmare for this administration for the past 3 months. What can we expect?
Well, you're right. It's been a PR nightmare. Two reasons. One is that the editorial boards don't like what they're doing, and two, they haven't handled PR very well. But back to your initial question, I believe they're going to get criticized, kind of just like I believe that the sun's going to rise tomorrow morning. I mean, short of abandoning all conservative principle in doing exactly what the editorial pages editorialize, they're not going to say good things about the governor or the legislature or anything any conservative does.
All right. Our guest this afternoon, of course, we have Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, nccivitas.org. I've got to get an issue here in a few moments, Francis. We have not talked about this, but the job numbers are coming in. There is a spin coming from AP that the jobless numbers have declined, but there is a spin from others I find interesting that says, well, the economy and the job environment in North Carolina still hasn't improved, and I'm wondering, are they setting this up as an excuse to further challenge this administration, because jobs have been one of the big issues for Governor McCrory? Our guest again, Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, nccivitas.org. One of the issues here is to pay attention to how the news is covered and compare it to, perceptions and reality. You're listening, of course, to Viewpoints here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. We're talking jobs here in a moment with our guest, Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, nccivitas.org. Since we're talking jobs, we're going to be talking about entrepreneurial spirit in North Carolina, which leads me to, of course, mentioning Advanced Water Systems, a family-owned operation with an entrepreneurial spirit. As a matter of fact, for the benefit of our guest this afternoon, Francis DeLuca, he'll appreciate this. This is now the largest Kinetico dealer in the country. Why? Because they cover an area as far south as Hilton Head, South Carolina, Francis, and as far north as Washington, D.C., and from Greensboro to the coast, the one source, the only source for all things at Kinetico, and of course, the renowned non-electric water solutions. By the way, they do have, they were been known as the twin tank water softening solution, but they now have a single tank option as well. So if you're looking for, and if you live anywhere in this vicinity of what I've just described geographically, the source is the best source, and that is Advanced Water Systems, a family-owned operation that has grown just by outstanding service. And of course, they're quick to demur and say, wait a second, these Connecticut water softeners need no service. Well, maybe so, but the number of testimonials we've gotten from Connecticut customers indicates to me that their attention to detail and to customer service is significant, such that they are now the largest Connecticut dealer in the country. I can tell you about all the local offices, Old Cherry Point Road in New Bern, Highway 70 East between Newport and Morehead City, their home office and showroom now going on for 30-plus years, and, of course, offices in Pender County and Pitt County and in the vicinity, Cary, and Virginia, and as I mentioned, as far south as Hilton Head, South Carolina. But instead, I'm going to just give you the toll-free number, 800-865-1208. That's 800-865-1208, or online at KineticoNC.com. Now I'm going to spell that for you. KineticoNC.com. KineticoNC.com. And that toll-free number again, 800-865-1208. Hilton Head, South Carolina. Isn't that impressive, Francis?
The people in those areas are fortunate to be able to access such a fine company.
You wouldn't happen to know anything about Hilton Head, South Carolina now, would you? But anyhow, all right, I'm just giving my guest a quick gig. Let's talk here for a moment about jobs and the job outlook. And I was reading something earlier today, and I'm wondering about this. First, the news from South by North Strategies LTD. The AP notes that we've seen actually a reduction in jobless claims for the month of August, and yet from John Quinterno, the lead is, in August, employers in North Carolina eliminated 1,700 more payroll positions than they added. That drop was driven almost entirely by a net reduction of 6,400 jobs, a negative 1.5% on the part of local governments. So far in 2013, North Carolina has gained 20,000 more jobs than it has lost, a 0.5% increase, and the year is shaping up to be the worst year for job growth since the onset of the recovery. And that story, followed by a report from little right of center organization, the North Carolina Justice Center. And Jeff Shaw writes, North Carolina unemployment rate dropped to 8.7% in August, according to the latest jobs report from the Division of Employment Security. But this improvement, in quotation marks, is largely the result of a mathematical quirk and masks deeper long-term problems in the state's labor market, most notably the lack of available jobs for unemployed workers. Okay, we're looking at, according to John Quinterno, the number of jobs that have basically been eliminated permanently from the job market, yet we see a reduction in jobless claims, and the claim from the North Carolina Justice Center that this is a lack of available jobs for unemployed workers. I'm a little concerned about the economy, but is this an effort to spin good news and make it look worse?
No, Lockwood, the news on employment has not been good, and it hasn't been good since 2007 when we went into this recession.
Okay.
And you know, in spite of spending literally trillions of dollars on government spending and everything, what we're seeing, and really this is the story every month, and people have not been paying. We're talking about labor force participation rates.
Mm-hmm.
People are dropping out of the labor force. That's why unemployment is going down. So they can spin it any way they want, but it's the same story, just a different month. And it's not just North Carolina. It's most of the nation, except for there are a few states that have managed to leverage themselves out of it. And you know, one of the reasons for tax cutting, one of the reasons for reform of our legal system, one of the reasons for the reform regulation that the legislature has done over the last few years is to try and start leveraging North Carolina out of this cycle of decreasing job availability and to create jobs. One more thing. This is not just a North Carolina problem. It's a nationwide problem. That is why the Federal Reserve this week surprised everybody and did not start lessening up on quantitative easing on in terms of spending more money out of the Federal Reserve and buying treasuries and buying mortgage-backed securities. They kept up their $85 billion a month purchasing because the economy, they viewed the economy as very weak. They did not view the economy as strengthening, as job creation getting better. They know what's the underlying cause. So, you know, for the Justice Center and all their, you know, welcome to reality, which they haven't talked about in the last 5 years since Barack Obama was elected.
And the other aspect of this, and I found this interesting in John Quinterno's remarks, and again, this is at the opening, the drop was driven, meaning the reduction in unemployment claims, the drop was driven almost entirely by a net reduction, 6,400 jobs, a negative 1.5% on the part of local governments. Local governments are beginning to tighten their employment structure as well. And I'm wondering, is this partly as a result of having to be fiscally conservative, or is there also some concerns related to national health care?
Well, that could be part of it, is that, you know, government has to is going to have to fall in line with providing some of these local governments may not be providing it. But I don't think that's as much as a driver as that is really what's driving the decrease of jobs in the state and nation right now, is that a lot of places are just downsizing so they can avoid the full, if they're near the cusp of being impacted by Obamacare, they're dropping them. They're dropping the number of full-time people. All of that then drives a reduction in tax availability, and especially at the local level. Because if you think about sales tax, if you think about permits, if you think about property taxes, and property taxes are done on inventory and stuff, and so if a local company is reducing their production, the property taxes collected will be less. If they shut a plant, a lot less property taxes.
All right. Our guest, of course, Francis DeLuca, the JWP Civitas Institute of the governor, has made jobs one of his signatures. And, of course, that's associated with the issue of new tax laws. Is there any indication that North Carolina might be, and this may be premature, but any indication that North Carolina might be slowly clawing its way out of this this employment hole, or is it going to take some time? And are we setting this administration up for additional criticism?
Well, I think it was always going to take time. And remember, all these changes, many of them haven't even taken place yet. Many of them start taking the tax changes, don't start till next year, till 2014. Some of these regulatory reform will take years to see. A lot of this stuff it has a long lead time. But the thing about it is that you're starting to establish a climate that when businesses look, they will move. And I think, you know, you see some of the big, especially in the Triangle, you've seen a lot of big announcements for corporate headquarters and stuff coming into the Triangle. This is a moving in. And a lot of that, I believe, some of that is based on worker, you know, the universities, and looking down the road at what the environment looks like in North Carolina in the future, because there you talk about a much more favorable tax environment, a much more favorable regulatory environment, a much more favorable legal environment in terms of lawsuits and everything. So they can look forward and they can factor that into their things, and they're moving from higher tax states, higher regulated states, states with a much less favorable legal climate. So I think we'll start to see that. But it's going to take a while. It's like a big ocean liner. You can't turn it on a dime.
All right. I want to get to one other issue politically before we get to the bad bill playoffs that all the audience can participate in. I'll tell you about that in a few minutes. But before we go to the break, Francis, I want to talk about the activities in North Carolina relative to politics, specifically that of Senator Hagan's seat. More Republicans seem to be considering a run for that seat, with Tom Tillis being the obvious, I would say, front runner at this point, insofar as his announcement early on that he was intending to do so. Still waiting for a decision from the president pro tem of the Senate, Phil Berger, that state Senate. We've got other candidates are now beginning to express, or potential candidates express interest and establish various study committees. What's going on? Is there a feeling that, in spite of Tom Tillis' record as a Speaker of the House, that there are Republicans that are just not happy with the prospect?
I think, look, it's a Senate seat that's winnable for Republicans, so you've got a lot of people who view themselves as a United States Senator. Tillis is not.
Okay, wait. Let me interrupt you here. Francis, you say you're saying it is winnable. In other words, you're saying that because this is a seat that's, well, it, with one Republican in Washington right now, there's dissatisfaction with Kay Hagan sufficient to warrant real potential change in this position.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Wow.
And look, Hagan's approval, disapproval numbers have been pretty static. Really, I would say most people don't really even know who Kay Hagan is. They know the name, but she has no real image in the public.
How does she compare to Richard Burr?
No, she's a little more favorable right now.
Okay.
She's been in the news a whole lot more than Richard Burr, both pro and negative, people running ads for her and against her. So mm-hmm. She's been in the news, actually, where Richard Burr hasn't run for office since 2010, so he's been out of the news.
Okay. And I read a poll recently, and I'm trying to remember where I saw this, that gave the indication that Tom Tillis' numbers still are not that high. And that's not, when I say not high, his numbers for recognition are not that high, which is a surprise. As a matter of fact, most voters, I'm looking at this very quickly before we go on, WRAL, a real proponent of the conservative agenda, tongue-in-cheek on that one, writes, despite being arguably the two most powerful political figures in the state and potential U.S. candidates, House Speaker Tom Tillis and Senate President Pro Tem Phil Berger are not well-known among voters surveyed by the Elon University poll. That's a surprise. Again, that they're using the term among voters, but you said a moment ago that the Elon poll does not poll just voters. It polls all folks within certain age ranges, right?
Right, but it doesn't matter. They are not well known among voters. You got to remember,
really?
They're still only representatives from a small district in different parts of the state. One's from a state Senate district, one's from a state House district. It is not surprising at all. Most people did not know who Mark Basnight was after all the years of him being a state senator. People do not follow state news outside of Raleigh in the major papers.
Wow.
Very little coverage of state news happens.
That's surprising and it's disappointing. Interesting observation. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get back to this issue of the state legislature. We're going to talk about bad bills and a few other items with our guest before we wrap things up here this evening on Viewpoints. Of course, the guest being Francis DeLuca of the JWP Civitas Institute, nccivitas.org. Francis, let's talk about the bad bill playoffs. We'll talk about that in just a moment here on Viewpoints. Ooh, I've got to bring this up very quickly before we get to the bad bill of the week. On the website at the NC Civitas Institute website, JWP Civitas Institute, is nccivitas.org. Stop Common Core in North Carolina. Boy, you want to talk about confusion. We've got all these business leaders promoting Common Core, Francis. We have the governor who's expressed support for it, and now the lieutenant governor, who is very concerned and doubtful in his support. What's going on with Common Core? We're going to be chatting about this next week, I might add.
Hopefully, are you going to be talking with Dr. Lupke from our office? Are you going to be talking with some other people?
I can do that as well. Thank you very much. I'll keep that in my mind.
Yeah, no, we had this past week, we had a session with some legislators, a lot of Board of Education members from around the state, and we brought in some of the foremost experts from around the country on this, including a woman who served on the validation committee for the Common Core standards and refused to endorse the standards and is critical of them because they're neither they've never been vetted, they've never been tested, and they haven't been validated, and they aren't even the standards the committee put together because the bureaucrats who were working on the changed the standards before they were actually published. So she, and this is a woman who PhD, renowned around the U.S. for her education credentials, was the Massachusetts Commissioner of Education who wow. helped to bring Massachusetts education system to one of the best in the country, developed a teacher test. She personally helped develop that teacher test, which is now copied around the country for getting teachers coming out of the education schools to make sure they're prepared to actually teach. So we're talking about someone who is very credible, saying that this is not a good idea.
And yet we've got industry leaders in the state that are coming to the table. You know, I still ask the question, where is the State Board of Education? Department of Public Instruction, I can appreciate. Their job is to promulgate you being an ex-sailor in green, that is Marine Corps. That famous term, promulgate. But where is the State Board of Education? Then we're going to get quickly into this, the egregious eight, according to your cohort, Brian Balfour. But where's the State Board of Education in this conversation about the Common Core?
Francis? Well, unfortunately, the previous State Board was the one who got us into this.
I understand, but
the
current
State Board, and that's one of the problems, is the chairman, Bill Coby, is in favor of Common Core, and all they hear on this is standards, and nobody can argue against high standards.
Well,
but you can argue against these standards for a number of reasons. One, they're not necessarily high. They're also not necessarily they we know they're not tested. We know there is no validation of are these good standards? Do they achieve the results? And the other thing is tremendous cost to states. And here's the other fundamental thing. It's a violation of our constitutional principles that the states are sovereign and that Washington does not tell everybody how to educate their children. There's nothing in the Constitution that says anything about the federal government having a role in education.
All right. We didn't get to this. I just want to make mention of this, Francis, as we wrap things up. Go to the website, nccivitas.org, and you'll see three buttons up there. Click on the one that goes to Bad Bill of the Year. We're down to the egregious eight.
And vote.
You've got the elite eight, but they're, according to Brian Balfour, I think we're going to need to change that to the egregious eight. Next week, we'll be talking about the final four, and we'll be focusing on those final four. Francis, stay with me. I'll chat with you briefly off air. Up next, of course, Jerry Doyle here on the Talk Station.